Hello, and welcome to Turning Data into Dollars, where we ask industry experts to share insights into how to best use your most valuable asset, your data. With an abundance of disparate data sources from social media, email, purchase, digital marketing, research, and more, we help you connect the dots to develop customer engagement strategies that drive sales. Why should you care or listen to us? The reason is simple. At IndiQ, we know what it takes to influence consumer behavior and create evangelists for your brand. We focused our entire business on it. Now, let's get to the show. I'm Nicole DeVault, Marketing Director at IndiQ and your host for today's podcast. I'm here today with Matt Butler, co-founder of Bonsai Data Solutions. As a founding member of Google's analyst organization, Matt Butler has served the retail, consumer goods, restaurants, travel, and finance industries for more than 14 years. He has strategically planned billions in digital marketing investments and realized impressive returns. Matt served as Google's executive digital analytics advisor for more than 40 Fortune 500 companies, including Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, Sears, Kohl's, State Farm, Best Buy, and more. While at Google, Matt designed and chaired the digital ad auction curricula for Google's global analytics teams and served as a panelist and keynote speaker at dozens of academic events and industry conferences. Matt co-founded Bonsai Data Solutions in 2020, helping companies transform into resilient and self-sufficient data-driven organizations. Matt presented a webinar this month on behalf of IndiQ entitled Identifying Wasted Media Dollars, How to Optimize Your Digital Spend. The link to this webinar is in the podcast description below. Check it out. This webinar was so well received, we wanted to follow up with Matt on the podcast. But before we get started with questions that we received during Matt's presentation, Matt, can you give us a brief overview of the concept of wasted media spend?
Sure thing. So I think, ever since there's been marketing and media, you know, there's always been this understanding that, you know, some of your media and marketing works, some of it doesn't. I think when we talk about wasted media dollars, though, we aren't just, kind of referring to, you know, media that might not work. Like, for instance, if you see a billboard, you know, as you're driving, I might be driving to my house one day and see a billboard for, you know, a motorcycle. And, you know, I don't ride a motorcycle and I have no plans to buy one. So, you know, you could say, hey, you know, this is an ad that reached me and, you know, I'm not interested. So maybe that's wasted. I don't really think we think of that as wasted. Like, you know, you are tending to reach me with an ad, people will buy or don't buy. And so like, that's just sort of a good faith effort. That's a good use of media and marketing. It just didn't work. I think when we talk about waste, we're talking about an instance that's a little more specific than that. So when you have information about a consumer or customer that tells you more about them, but you are unable to use it or use it in an incorrect way, right? So in the case of the billboard with the motorcycle, you wouldn't know if I was interested. You just, you know, you reached me and I saw it and, you know, it didn't work. That's different than, you know, if I'm a customer of your store and you know I buy, you know, red hats and, you know, red shirts and I'm just a big consumer of a particular type of the color of product in your store. And then if you keep showing me advertisements or sending me mailers or, you know, reaching me on my phone with promotions for blue hats or products, right? This is an example of, in our minds, right, a wasted media impression or a wasted opportunity because you had the information, you could have reached me with something more relevant, but you kind of missed the opportunity, or in that case, right, you did something completely counter to the data that you had at hand.
Exactly. That makes sense. So would you say that you're referring to more types of digital marketing where you have that data and are a little bit more targeted as opposed to something more traditional like a billboard or a television commercial?
Exactly. So, you know, that's the beauty, right? And I think the reason why digital is so prevalent in all of our media and marketing plans today is it has that data underpinning it, there is that capability to be, you know, incredibly targeted and effective with the media dollars we have. And so, yeah, when we see waste in digital, it's particularly, you know, troublesome or particularly problematic in our view, because you know, I've signed up for your software and then later on I get an ad to sign up again. It's like, hey guys, you have my information. I'm already a customer.
You know I've signed up.
You don't need to keep trying to sell me on it. Like, this is a blatant misuse of, you know, what is definitely, you know, that ad impression was paid for. It's coming out of your marketing budget. You should be using it to acquire a new customer, and instead you're wasting it on me.
Exactly. So you say when you notice that a company is doing this, so how can a company identify their wasted media spend? I know in the webinar that you presented on behalf of InnoQ a couple of weeks ago, you talked about offering a digital media waste audit, but what does that entail, and how can somebody go about finding out if they are in fact wasting and how much they're wasting on digital spend?
Sure thing. Yeah, that's a great question, Nicole. So, you know, there's certainly plenty of ways you can reduce waste. You know, if you're buying media directly through an advertising platform, right? You're probably familiar with tools or best practices and capabilities. And so following those is, you know, I think in many respects, still sort of the first port of call, right? Like, if you're trying to reach people for women's shoes, you know, and your platform allows you to target women, you know, definitely do that. But once you get beyond that, it gets maybe more difficult to identify that waste. You know, with the effectiveness of digital comes lots of ways to reach people online, right? You can reach people on, you know, through Google, through Facebook, through ad networks. You know, just frankly, there's thousands of ways to do it. And so I think the challenge for the marketer or the practitioner, right, is as a consumer of these platforms, those platforms only have data about what is within their sort of realm, or, you know, within their walls, so to speak. So, you know, if you are show, you know, if you potentially could show me an ad and you could show me this ad through my, you know, Facebook app or Instagram, or you could reach me while I'm surfing the web on my phone, you might be doing that through two completely different systems, through two different platforms. And you might be either reaching me with the wrong message or reaching me too many times, right? But you're not gonna see that information within the data of the platform that you're buying from, because those platforms probably don't share data and they probably don't talk to each other in that way. Mm-hmm. And so you need a perspective that sees across, you know, not into the individual details of all of your marketing platforms and accounts, but you actually need a perspective a little bit even higher than that. You need to first have a view that understands, hey, at any given point in time, how many platforms are active, right? How many ways are you reaching consumers today across the digital ecosystem? And is that one platform? Is that two? Is that 10? And what are they? And then, so once you kind of have that view, which is something that when we talk about our data risk assessment or sort of the work that we do through this this marketing technology analysis at Bonsai, that's sort of the first thing we do is, one, we take a step back outside of the individual platforms and the data within one or two platforms. And we say, how many data and how many platforms are even in your under your sphere. And then once we understand that, the sort of the kind of the real trick is understanding, okay, well, where are consumers being reached by each one of those components? So what we mean by that is, if you're reaching, so you're buying ads through the Trade Desk and YouTube and Facebook, the question is, what part of the digital journey for a consumer you're trying to reach does Facebook reach, and which part does YouTube reach, and then which part does, say, the Trade Desk reach? And are those the same touch points? Are those different touch points? That can be really tricky, potentially impossible, frankly, to dissect just by looking at data from within a platform. And so that's something that we bring to the table, where we're able to understand not just where, what tools are in your toolbox, what platforms you're using holistically, but then also once we know that, what are the different touch points in different consumer journeys that each platform kind of covers? And then what we do is we say, let's focus on the intersections of those, or at least let's identify where there might be, you know, there might be a consumer interaction, whether it be on the web or in an app or some other example where we say, hey, you know, you have five tools or you have 10 tools that could be reaching consumers, right, at the same exact point in their digital daily journey. And, you know, that could be good, that could be bad, but in a lot of cases, right, that means that you are inadvertently either over-targeting, duplicative targeting, or doing some other, yeah, I guess you said it best in the beginning. It, generally, there's media dollar being wasted in those in those cases that could be better utilized on either incremental touch points, right, and some part of the digital consumer journey that you don't currently cover, or you could simply allocate your strategy better across the platforms. Say, you know, say that this particular consumer's journey is being targeted by lots of networks. Maybe there's one network that really is the most effective way to reach your customer for that given touch point. Why don't you just use that network to reach the customer there? So, you know, maybe it's Facebook's ad network on Instagram, or maybe it's, you know, a double click campaign purchase when you're targeting inventory within owned and operated spaces on Google, or maybe it's, you know, the Trade Desk or Adobe for some other part of the publishing, a publisher site or network that a consumer is reading. So the answers always vary, but that's, I know that's a really long answer, but that's sort of how we approach it.
No, that's awesome. That was very helpful. Thank you. One thing I wanted you to touch on that you mentioned on the webinar is the, or expand upon just a little bit, is the potential to be competing against yourself for ad space. So I know that you mentioned that that's another way that digital ad spend can be, we'll say, wasted, as we're saying today on the podcast. But you talked about actually driving up your cost per click or cost per acquisition by competing against yourself. Can you touch on that briefly?
For sure. And this gets... so apologize. I mean, this gets kind of wonky, right? It gets into sort of the way, right, the internet is monetized, right? How ads are served across the different parts of the internet. You know, many people might know this, you might not know this, but like when you're reading, you know, reading on the New York Times, or you're reading your you know, local newspaper online or some other source of information as you're, you know, having your morning coffee. If you're reading a publisher's site or you're reading content, it's that content's very often monetized by not just one or two ads, right? By like hundreds of ads potentially. And, you know, we're kind of used to dealing with that, I think, as consumers now, you know, for better or for worse, right? With banners or pop-ups or videos. But I think what people might not realize is it's not just the quantity of ads that is sometimes an issue. Those publishers, to serve all of those ads, right, at scale, they are throwing the kitchen sink at these pages on their sites in terms of the amount of ad networks they are saying, hey, listen, ad network, you know, X, if you guys have an advertiser that's interested in this, you know, impression, go ahead and give us an ad, right? We'll go ahead, you know, they'll say that to, you know, ad network X, but they'll say that to ad network Y, Z, A, B, you know, and all the other ones, right? In the alphabet and under the sun. And so sometimes they're basically, you know, they're taking one spot on their page, right? Say above the article fold or whatever. And they're basically saying, all right, you know, all you ad networks, you can serve an ad here. And what we're going to do as a publisher is we are going to go ahead and try to make the most amount of money we can, right, on that ad impression. And so like, that happens really quickly, like not to get into too many of the details, but the, you know, the ad networks are essentially bidding for the space. And then the publisher run, you know, the network runs an auction. The auction determines which ad served. Well, that's kind of where the overspending on the slot, right? By buying from multiple networks that don't talk to each other, that's where the problem lies. So if you're an advertiser and say you're really trying to reach, you know, Matt, right? And you really want to reach me when I'm reading this news article. If you're targeting me, right, and you know it's me, but you're targeting me with, say, four different ad networks audience list, and they all are bidding to show me an ad, well, that's sort of where the auction part comes in and becomes kind of problematic. So the thing is, right, like when more people are bidding in an auction, things get more expensive. That's kind of the nature of an auction. Well, you might have taken, you know, maybe without four of your ad networks bidding for that slot, maybe there's only two other advertisers out there, right, who are, you know, willing to show. So it's you as a company versus, say, two others. And as long as you bid high enough to win, you'll show me the ad. But if it's you, two other companies, but then you again three times, now you're bidding against six people, right? And four of them or three of them are yourself. Right. So that, you know, like, you know, impression to impression, right? It's maybe not necessarily something that you will see, right, on an individual click or individual ad impression basis. But over time, having that dynamic play out over not just, you know, Matt and my interactions today, but over, you know, the thousands or potentially millions of customers you're trying to reach, this adds up really quickly. And what you end up doing is you end up basically paying more for showing the same amount of ad.
Yes, thank you for expanding upon that. And thank you for providing a brief overview of media waste and the media audit and what companies can do. I'm going to jump into a couple questions that we got from your last presentation on the same topic. These are a bit more specific, but let's jump into it. So we had one question from the audience. It said, can assessing our marketing technology stack have an immediate impact on our bottom line?
So yeah, so in short, yes. And I think, you know, I think immediate is, you know, can mean a lot of things. I think we've been talking about so far, which is, you know, how to approach waste strategically across platforms, identify it, dissect it, eliminate it, right? That even in the best case scenario, right? Even if you have all your practitioners available on call, right? And we dive right in, you know, it might take a little like work. And so, you know, could we eliminate all of that waste, you know, immediately, say in a day or less? I don't know. I think maybe, you know, certainly within a week. You could get gains even faster though. And, you know, believe it or not, the examples we've talked about so far, they're not even necessarily the most egregious ones that we see. Let me give you an example. So, you know, we see a lot of companies that are currently paying for ad technology software, right? Licensing for that software or serving fees or what have you. They're paying for it and they haven't used it, or they don't spend anything in terms of driving traffic and, you know, media dollars through it at all. And sometimes they haven't done it for a while. So sometimes there's ad technology and software you're paying these fees for. And you definitely can get rid of them because you haven't been reaching customers with them for a long time. And so like, it sounds simple, but just identifying if that's happening and then eliminating it, like that's something that you can do right in a day. And sometimes that will literally save you money, right? Like, you know, pick up the phone, identify the issue, eliminate the problem. And, you know, you're going to see a reduction in your costs to, you know, acquire customers like immediately. So it can be that fast. There's other kind of secondary effects that those quick wins drive as well. So we haven't talked at all about how, you know, the technology and the amount of technology you use on your website affects how fast you reach a customer, right? Like how fast does your website load when someone visits your website, or how fast does, you know, your app identify your information, or those kind of things. Every time you get rid of something you're not using and free up that space for that interaction to get a little faster, you actually are getting you're going to get more consumers to respond to, you know, all the great assets and content that you've created for that customer. And so, it, that essentially immediately kicks up the value you get from your media and marketing. And so I see that as another way you're like kind of eliminating waste, right? It's sort of that invisible waste of the lost interaction. But I think both things are like really, really tangible, short-term, immediate wins that taking an approach of examining your marketing technology and eliminating waste with respect to the tools you're using. I think those are two examples that they can go really long, right? A real long way, really quickly.
That's great. That's super helpful. Thank you for adding that. Our next question is, how would we acquire new customers without third-party ad networks?
Yes. So let's, I guess, first address the sort of, I guess maybe for those who are like, you know, real veterans in the space, I don't think necessarily our point of view is that you could get rid of all your third-party ad targeting right now if you were trying to reach, you know, a really high volume of if your business is direct to consumer or, you know, a B2C and you need to reach a lot of customers quickly, right? I think there's still a place for ad networks and third-party targeting for sure. I think that being said, could you achieve a great majority of the customer touch points and could you acquire new customers and reach your current customers without any third-party ad targeting at all? Today, absolutely. So the thing you gotta remember, the thing to keep in mind is that the companies that are typically helping you build your first party databases, right? So your customer data, your asset analytics, all of those things, the great majority, I mean, the major companies in the space, right? You know, you've got Google, Adobe, they also, right? They also have portals to reach consumers with their own advertising infrastructure. They have essentially everything you need. And so what that means is your first party data can find, you know, the same touch points on the internet for your current and prospective customers that the third party ad networks were doing for you. So as opposed to reaching someone on the New York Times with a third party cookie, right, and audience targeting, that exact same interaction on New York Times, you could take the first party information that you've collected and, you know, reach, you know, essentially target and reach me when I'm reading the New York Times, but you could serve that ad up using the first party audience that you built, right? So there would be no real need to have had a third party collect data on me at all when I was on your website. So the other advantage to a first party audience targeting strategy, right? So understanding what first party you do have, how you can turn that into audience targeting and how you can deploy that in a media strategy across the web. The other advantage, like in our view, the greatest part about that strategy is, you know, yes, you can get the feature parity or the reach that you used to get doing it with third parties. So that's great. And maybe that saves you some costs, but it's actually not only potentially less costly to execute, it is also potentially more effective and it is also more compliant. It's more secure. It's a better user experience. So, you know, if you've anyone who's been paying attention in this industry, or if you've been leading digital marketing strategies for, you know, the last year and a half to 2 years, privacy, data privacy are, you know, not just buzzwords now, they're essentially mission critical elements of having a future-proof marketing and acquisition strategy online. With GDPR back in 2018 and now with CCPA, that is, I don't know when this podcast will run, but it'll either be enforceable by the time this podcast runs or it'll be soon to be enforceable in the US. These regulations have very tight restrictions on not just what you can do with consumer information, but they require you in many cases to get consent from users to say, hey, I'm a user of this website. I consent your business to collect information about me and then use that in whether it be, you know, for marketing purposes or others. And so first party data is data that since you're collecting it, you can ask permission to collect it and you can control it if someone decides that they don't want you to have that information anymore, right? So if they, in Europe, it's this whole right to be forgotten. In the States, it's essentially a process by which you could ask a company to stop, you know, to kind of delete the information that you're, that they're storing on you. When it's your data as a business, when it's your first party information, you can delete it if requested. And that's another part of compliance. When it's a third party collecting data, right, on your consumers, you don't control that third party, right? They might be compliant. They might tell you they're, you know, they might have essentially been certified or passed particular industry benchmarks, but at the end of the day, it isn't yours. And so there's an element there that as a business, you can't control that. And so eliminating those parts of your, you know, third-party data dependencies that you have just eliminates one more, you know, vector of risk down the road. I don't think a lot of businesses in the States necessarily have, you know, sort of felt the practical implications of, you know, when data privacy goes wrong necessarily, but I think this is not going away. This is, you know, there are some serious penalties and fines if consumers aren't able to execute their data privacy rights, and migrating your digital acquisition strategy to one that's more resilient, that's more future-proof and more compliant, which essentially is, you know, what we're talking about here with, you know, migrating your strategy to a first party targeted approach. There's just all of those benefits.
Thank you, Matt. This has been very helpful, and this is a great follow-up to the webinar that you presented. And if listeners are interested, a link to that webinar is in the podcast description below. But if our listeners want to get more information, how can they find out more information or reach out to you?
Yeah, thanks. So if you want to learn more about us, and either keep talking shop on how to, you know, think about your marketing technology, how to get the most out of it, or if you've got other issues that revolve around, you know, measurement, automation, and data and business, you know, yeah, definitely see us online. We're at bonsai.llc. And you can, or you can just reach out to us. So my email, matt@bonsai.llc.
Thanks, Matt. We appreciate it. And we appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Nicole.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on Turning Data into Dollars.